This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What we're seeing in the case of Amazon is that a small handful of people are benefiting economically, while the vast majority are not.
Many of us are about to embark on our first COVID-19 holiday shopping season. With so many of our favorite stores closed or out of business, a logical alternative is to buy online. But before you log on to Amazon to fill your shopping cart, you might want to listen to this week's episode of Sea Change Radio. Today we welcome two sociologists whose new book is called The High Cost of Free Shipping, Amazon in the Global Economy. We talk about the impact that this e-commerce giant's exponential growth has on vulnerable populations, how the public is subsidizing the modern-day robber baron, and whether there may be ways to curb some of the company's more predatory practices. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jake Ali Mohammed Wilson and Ellen Reese. They're both sociology professors, and they're the co-editors of The Cost of Free Shipping, Amazon in the Global Economy. Jake, Ellen, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Happy to be here.
Likewise.
So you both are sociologists. What was the inspiration to writing a book about Amazon? What attracted you to this topic from a sociological standpoint?
Well, I think, you know, both Jake and I are actually located in Southern California, which is this major logistics and warehousing hub. Jake's university is in Long Beach, you know, where there's the huge port, right? I think it's the nation's largest port, the LA Long Beach port, right? And my university is located in Riverside, which is known to be the inland port, right? Because there's so many warehouses and you've got all these goods coming in through the port and into these warehouses. And it's very, very visible in both of our communities. You're just driving on the freeway. You've got Amazon trucks going by. You've got, you see the warehouses off the sides of the freeway. Our students are working in this industry. Many of my students, are working as Amazon warehouse workers, or their family members are, their friends are, especially these days, right? The demand for delivered goods to your home has increased, right? So, it's hard to ignore this growing phenomena.
Right. And I would say, when Ellen and I began this project, it preceded the pandemic. And Amazon was already on a course to dominate kind of the global corporate, power, if you will. But the pandemic really sped that up. And so without a doubt, so now Amazon is what we would argue is the world's most powerful corporation. It's the second largest private employer now in the United States behind Walmart. And it will, we would imagine, the next couple of years overtake Walmart because the speed at which this corporation has expanded in every kind of facet of life, not just online shopping, but also Amazon Web Services. For those of us who are educators, AWS powers an Amazon subsidiary, powers, education platforms. One of the other motivations was just to draw attention to this growing resistance and rebellion to the increasing concentration of corporate power around the world. And we thought Amazon is the site that brings together so many different communities and activists together.
And this is happening not just in the United States, but also in other parts of the world, including Europe. One of the chapters in our book focuses on South Asia and India in particular, where Amazon has grown in influence.
When you were first started to research this, what was the thing that really shocked you about the cost of free shipping when it comes to ordering off of Amazon?
One of the things that I know motivated us to want to edit this book was just the incredible fast rise of Amazon in the economy. In just a handful of years, of course, consumption has changed from, you know, driving to the mall and purchasing goods to now just a click of a button. And so we call this one-click consumerism has created an enormous impact on workers, on the economy, and the environment.
We've had Professor Donald Shoup, who wrote a book called The Hidden Cost of Free Parking. And this kind of reminded me of that. Like, we don't think twice about something that seems free, but nothing is for free, as we will learn reading your book. Specifically, when somebody orders something that has free shipping versus, let's say, $10 shipping, how does that work out economically?
Well, I think what we're trying to draw attention to is that, you know, that free cost of shipping comes at the cost of both workers and also residents of communities, you know, where warehouses are concentrated. And, you know, from the labor perspective, you've got a lot of warehouse workers who, when they're first hired, are hired for just $15 an hour. And, you know, during the pandemic, their pay went up temporarily. They were given $2 extra per hour for hazard pay, but, you know, Amazon has quickly taken that back. You know, so they're back down to $15 an hour as their entry level wage, you know, which is, you know, as we all know in this economy, is like not enough to live on, let alone support a family. You know, it's not a living wage. So, you know, I think, and there's a toll too in terms of just what it takes for workers to deliver these goods, you know, in such a fast pace that's often expected, right? Increasingly, we've gotten used to getting things overnight, right, delivered to our homes, and so that takes a tremendous toll on workers, not just warehouse workers, but delivery drivers too, who are under a tremendous pressure to work quickly at a very constant pace. They're monitored heavily to make rate, to not spend too much time off task and so forth. And that's very, very stressful for the workers. It takes a real toll. It also creates a very dangerous environment. And Amazon has a very high injury rate. There's been a number of investigative reports on this, you know, showing that Amazon's injury rate is higher than the industry average. And this is an industry known to be dangerous, right? So there's a tremendous toll on warehouse workers.
Jake, you have an ecology background, and I want to learn more about the toll that Amazon has on delivery drivers and its labor force. But from a global perspective, if you were to compare the impact on the planet of a shrinking Amazon rainforest and a exploding company the size of Amazon, which one do you think is having a more deleterious effect on our planet?
I think they're both related. And I think one of the things that, you know, Ellen and I have documented with the rise of Amazon as the world's most powerful corporation, that, you know, as the economy has shifted, especially in 2020, due to the pandemic, we've seen a surge in online purchases, which has created an enormous, you know, carbon footprint. You know, here where I live in Los Angeles, you know, every single day I see scores of Amazon branded vans passing my home. And those vans are being driven by low-paid workers who are not protected, workers who are very vulnerable, oftentimes don't have benefits. And this is very much connected to, as you know, Ellen mentioned, you know, where these warehouses are being built. are creating also a large environmental impact. There's a great environmental justice issue connected to most of the workers who do the hard work for Amazon are workers of color, a large number of immigrants, and the folks who live around these warehouses with all this pollution are also communities of color. So I think one of the important things is to really connect worker justice with environmental justice, and Amazon is a great site that connects both of those things.
Well, my shoes, they come from Singapore. My flesh, that's from Taiwan. My table cloths from Malaysia. My belt buckles from the Amazon. You know, this shirt I wear comes from the Philippines, and the car I drive is a Chevrolet. Put together down in Argentina by a guy making 30 cents a day. Well, it's a night.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to the co-editors of The Cost of Free Shipping, Jake Ali Mohammed Wilson and Ellen Reese. When we studied industries like meat packing industries, we learn about their predatory practices in smaller rural towns where a meat packing company will take its operation to, let's say, Western Utah and say, if you don't give us everything we want in terms of tax breaks and look the other way in terms of worker protections, we'll just take our meat packing plant somewhere else. Amazon has had some very well-publicized bidding wars for its headquarters outside of Washington State. Maybe you can kind of summarize those for us and talk about how this process has kind of gotten a little out of hand.
Absolutely. I mean, I think many of us followed this in the news. You know, it was well publicized race for, you know, sort of which city would get HQ2 in its city, and city governments were offering all kinds of subsidies. Sometimes states even were offering subsidies, right, for to try to attract Amazon into their city, right, offering millions of dollars, right, of taxpayer money, right, to attract this corporation, or offering to, you know, sort of look the other way when it came to environmental regulations and so forth, right? Yeah, I mean, I think that's another cost. It's not just the cost on workers and on our environment and air quality, but also a financial cost for cities, right? This is a company that, you know, has had tremendous tax evasion as well, right? So there's a cost in terms of a failure to be able to raise revenue, you know, and that's such a critical issue, especially these days, right? As we're facing a lot of cutbacks and people are, you know, out of work, and, you know, city governments are then, you know, scrambling, you know, on what to do. You know, I think part of it, you know, is part of our motivation here too, is to draw attention to how much, you know, subsidies, unnecessary subsidies, right, that cities are just offering and with asking very little in return, yeah. Right? Not asking that there be certain standards, living wage standards, for example, for the employees, or to create union jobs or permanent jobs, even that, you know, ensuring that the jobs that are created are not just contingent jobs, you know, seasonal jobs and temporary jobs and so forth, but actually asking for real permanent living wage union jobs, quality jobs, right? You know, cities were not asking that, right? Instead, they were sort of offering a lot of subsidies and asking very little in return.
Give us a snapshot of the upper management and their net worth. We always hear about Jeff Bezos being the richest man in the world, but I remember when Walmart exploded in the 90s that we heard about the wealth of the Walmart family. there were lots of offshoots from this fortune. Is it similar in Amazon, or is this all Jeff Bezos just becoming insanely wealthy?
Well, you know, Jeff Bezos has certainly been the biggest winner of the 2020 pandemic. But just a handful of Amazon executives, you know, there was a story that came out earlier this year that looked at not only is Bezos the world's richest person now with a net worth that peaked at about $200 billion, but eight other executives that, you know, not just in Amazon, but corporate America is making a killing off of this pandemic. And so, again, this is more than just this one individual being a bad apple. What we're seeing here is a problem with the global economy that continues to not benefit the vast majority of people and workers and families, with having really potentially devastating effects on the environment.
From a consumer standpoint, what are our options? A lot of management types at Amazon would point to the efficiency of this shopping experience. You don't have to leave your home. You're not endangering the lives of others during a pandemic by standing in lines. This is the future. Is there a way for consumers to embrace this future without supporting a business that they don't want to? What are some of the options for consumers outside of Amazon for so many of these products that they sell?
One of the issues that we are trying to draw attention to is just the growing monopoly power, right, of Amazon. So I think, you know, there are certainly other options, but it is getting increasingly difficult, I think, for consumers, right, in terms of finding those options. And even, you know, the Amazon electronic retail platform, you know, is so enormous and so influential, you know, it's you know, what consumers repeatedly go to often, right? And so other companies often then have to use this platform, right, in order to get their products sold, right? And they do so at a cost, right? They pay fees for that. They're competing with each other over the buy box. But as various investigative reports have shown, the buy box is sort of rigged in Amazon's favor, right? They tend to give priority to companies that use its own logistics company, right? And this is just one example of the way in which one arm of Amazon sort of feeds another arm, right? And so, you know, I think for consumers, yeah, certainly there are other options, you know, independent bookstores, if you're talking about books, other kinds of companies or places to buy, or even grocery stores, unionized grocery stores as opposed to Whole Foods, right?
What about online, though? Is like I just bought something on eBay, and then I noticed it said it's part of like an Amazon Basics. In that purchase that I made, maybe you could walk me through the logistics of how would that work? Was I supporting Amazon or eBay more by buying this $5 item that was from an Amazon? It was labeled some kind of Amazon Basics, but I bought it through eBay. Is eBay a better alternative in your mind to support? How do you do your online shopping? Yes, it'd be great if we could all get all of our items from local bookstores and grocery stores,
right,
but
right.
The future is moving online. So what are some of our online options?
I agree. And it's often difficult. I'm like many other consumers, you know, I sometimes do purchase things through Amazon. I try to sometimes explore alternatives, but they don't always have the products I want, right? So it's, you know, and I think this is sort of gets to the growing monopoly power of this corporation, right? That's, you know, become the everything store, right? And because, you know, its retail platform is so dominant, right? That also means that it's become sort of the dominant supplier of various kinds of goods, right? And sometimes we don't even know it, right? So like if we purchase Zappos shoes, for example, right? This is an Amazon store, a company, right?
Like a stealth brand almost?
Right.
So Amazon owns Zappos?
Yeah, so
that's my understanding.
Amazon is now the largest shoe seller in the world. I think when we talk about efficiency, I would actually make an argument that in many ways it's far less efficient. E-commerce as a economic system or subsector of the economy is actually a lot more wasteful.
Break it down for us.
Yeah, so think about, well, you know, just I spent some time here in Los Angeles last summer driving around with delivery drivers, Amazon delivery drivers. And these are contracted workers who work for a small trucking company that Amazon hired. So they drive Amazon vans. They wear Amazon uniforms. Their employer is not Amazon.
They don't have any medical benefits from Amazon, for example, right?
That is correct. Amazon has no legal responsibility. The vans are leased by Amazon and their uniforms are leased. And that's the closest connection they have. And these drivers, they deliver Amazon Prime packages. And so what Amazon is doing is, you know, you can go online today and order, like a bookmark. Okay. It probably weighs less than half an ounce. Okay. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, that bookmark will be delivered to you within 2 days. Right. And so a worker, all the workers will have to, you know, work very fast in all the warehouses, all the different types of warehouses, in order for a delivery driver to pick up that bookmark, drive to your home. And sometimes if you live in an apartment, walk up the steps and drop off that bookmark 2 days later. To kind of point out that the title of your show in terms of sea change, this is a sea change in how we consume. And so a number of the drivers talk about that a lot of their time is delivering unnecessary products that don't require an expedited shipping. But the kind of corporate brand of Amazon's Prime, which is now the second largest subscription service in the world, there's over 150 million Prime members, is now creating this consumer expectation where everything has to be instant. And I think when we start to think about the incredible power that one corporation can have on the way that we consume and provide for our households without any recognition to those who do the work, the workers, or some of these broader implications for what is it doing to have, you know, thousands upon thousands of these delivery trucks in our neighborhoods, let alone all the warehousing and all the trucking that's going on with diesel emissions. All this fits into an incredibly inefficient system known as e-commerce.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to the co-editors of The Cost of Free Shipping, Jake Ali Mohammed Wilson and Ellen Reese. So when you think about what we were going through with the election over this summer, when the U.S. Postal Service became a focal point of people's concerns about getting their ballots in, we heard from postal workers that many of them had to have a special day where they were just solely delivering Amazon packages. It was like choking our nation's logistical system in many ways, wasn't it?
Yes, that is correct. And what we're seeing a defunding, if you will, of all these public services like the Postal Service, which, these things were made and intended to run at a loss for the greater good of society, right? Just like schools and
the military.
Exactly. So roads and all these things that we pay taxes for. Meanwhile, this one company who's known to be a tax evader is increasingly encroaching on these public good, right? And this is one of the issues, and this is something that Ellen and I make an argument for in the book, is that Amazon represents kind of this new style of consumer capitalism that brings together a lot of different actors uh, of you know, social movements from around the world, environmental movements, folks looking to, you know, hold corporations accountable, anti-racist movements, workers' movements, and even surveillance. You know, Amazon has championed the surveillance of not only workers, but its customers. And Amazon's not alone in that. Google and other tech companies do that as well. But no company does so many things on such a scale than Amazon.
And I think another important aspect of Amazon that we highlight in this book is, you know, the surveillance that this company has, not just of its workforce, of its consumers, but also of residents in cities, right? And, you know, I think, you know, has gained the attention of immigrant rights activists, right, because the surveillance technology that this corporation has created is used by ICE, right? It's used by our city police in many cases. It's used also by the federal government as well to surveil citizens and residents, right? And is part and parcel of, you know, detaining and deporting immigrants.
Let's imagine a country, if we will, that does not have any kind of exposure to Amazon. And they called up you guys and they wanted to do a little cost benefit analysis of the positives and negatives of bringing Amazon into their community. We've already kind of covered a lot of the negatives. What could possibly go in the positive column that you could share with them?
Well, I think the, you know, some of the ideas of, you know, allowing folks to order necessary goods, certainly like during a time like in a pandemic, is a good thing, right? People need to get things to survive. The question is, who owns the means of control, right? And who benefits from getting those goods to somebody who needs them? And what we're seeing in the case of Amazon is that a small handful of people are benefiting economically, while the vast majority are not, and that includes the workers and the communities surrounding these Amazon facilities. And I think, kind of globally speaking, we now have a consumer culture that is, you know, even the easiest it's ever been to purchase things mindlessly in many ways, right? And so there's an important environmental ethic there that We need to be very critical when a corporation like Amazon spends millions of dollars in greenwashing commercials on television to say that they have a environmental ethics in mind when they show us the exact opposite when it comes to polluting communities, especially poor and working class communities of color.
The book is called The Cost of Free Shipping, Amazon and the Global Economy. Jake Ali Mohammed Wilson and Ellen Reese, thanks so much for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Chris Joss, Bob Dylan, and Steven Stills. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.